Hey everybody, you might not have heard my voice in a while, but I'm back. It's Curtis Duggan from Remotely Serious. We've taken a break on the podcast. We've been off the air for, I guess, going on 3 or 4 months now. In December, I did a bit of a research trip slash remote work trip slash vacation to Costa Rica. Lots of interesting things going on down there, and I still think that's going to be an amazing time zone and location for remote workers and digital nomads who are looking for something where they can work the business hours of Pacific time or Central time or Eastern time up in North America, where they want somewhere that's safer than Mexico, depending on your view on how safe Mexico is. Costa Rica is generally considered to be safer in most areas. And it's just a beautiful place with jungles and beaches and mountains and anything you'd want in terms of natural landscape. And most of the things you would want in terms of amenities. It's still not something where you can order everything on Amazon and get your groceries in the middle of the night at a 24-hour grocery store like you might expect in some North American cities with their Walmarts and the Amazon and the modern highway system and all that. Costa Rica still has small roads, sometimes dirt roads. Cities can be connected through hilly and mountainous terrain. But with all that and with the tourism industry and the ministries down in Costa Rica preparing for a future where remote work and digital nomads are permanent, I think they're going to be doing great things down there. So this episode is not with a guest. It's just me. I wanted to check in. We are reworking the podcast for video. So I'm checking in, getting the podcast feed going a little bit in advance of that. That may be coming in May. But we've taken a break to retool, get ready to start video, and keep going just as good as ever. Today, I wanted to share some predictions I have for remote work and digital nomadism in 2024 and 2025. We're sitting here. I'm recording this in March of 2024. I imagine we'll release it pretty quickly, so you might be listening around the same time. But there's really 10 things I wanted to talk about, and I'll go rapid fire, so don't worry. You're not going to be sitting for a long lecture. But I just wanted to rapid fire 10 predictions I have for remote work and digital nomads in 2024. First of all, some context setting. I would say that it's been a bit of a retraction from some of the most optimistic highs of 2021 and 2022. Remote work and being a digital nomad in the wake of the pandemic, when most people started to be able to travel, and then especially after the vaccine rollout and more people were able to travel, 2021 and 2022 were an era of abundant optimism for remote work. I would say that many CEOs and many offices are calling people back from out where they are remote working and saying, you need to come to the office. And so people have asked me, what do you think? Like, was remote work just a fad? Was it just something that was part of the 0% interest rate times or the COVID times or whatever? And I think I kind of have two answers, and it leads me into my first prediction, which is that yes, many companies will take remote workers back to the office, but the bigger problem between, oh no, are we getting called back to the office, is remote work under attack? Jobs will be under attack. So my first prediction is that the bigger problem than back to work policies or back to the office policies will be mass layoffs, as the era of continuing to be high interest rates continues. And there's not really an end in sight in terms of drastic cuts back closer to the 0% interest world. I don't think we're going there, frankly. I don't think we're going there anytime soon. I don't think we're going back to 1% or 2% interest for the houses and mortgages and other things anytime soon. That has implications for commercial real estate, which I'll get into. But seriously, the bigger problem is not going to be whether your company has a back to or a remote work policy or not. It's whether they're going to keep your job or not, because both the macroeconomic situation and the situation with the interest rates and the correction that's happening from the excessive times of a couple of years ago, both that macroeconomic situation and the very black swan, once in a generation impact of the insertion of AI and large language models into the cost structure of the Fortune 500 and companies around the world and the equivalent of Fortune 500s around the world, there are going to be layoffs in knowledge worker jobs. As we see these models, they just released Claude 3 from Anthropic, which has a long context window, meaning it can handle a lot of input. It's smart. It's getting smart or smarter than GPT-4. Next year, we'll have GPT-5. So the ability to do knowledge work is being steadily eroded on kind of not a linear path, but more of an exponential path than I think most people are predicting. So we're going to see things like software engineering departments, data analysis departments, project management departments, graphic design departments, copywriting and writing of any kind, legal work, accounting work, banking work. All of those industries are going to have the equivalent of a smart junior worker who's trained in their industry, like a paralegal that can search all the legal cases all at once, or a data analyst who's able to ingest raw data and start making graphs, drawing conclusions, thinking about the next question to ask, and so on and so on. In each of these job categories, there's going to be this junior worker that's going to erode the ability of people to hire many junior workers and some senior workers. There's going to be AI agents that are doing people's jobs. So that's one. Worry about the layoffs, not the anti-remote work policies, because the layoffs are a much bigger problem. They're the existential threat to everyone's economic livelihood. Prediction two, AI agents will be the next frontier for innovation and self-employment. So maybe looking at the silver lining, looking at the glass half full, the grim reaper of AI is going to come away and take all the jobs, but people who learn to wield that weapon themselves by using AI agents as part of their workflow, and any employer that says, oh, for security reasons, we don't want you to use AI, I think that worker is going to fall behind if they choose not to learn how to use AI tools, or if the employer bans them from using AI tools for the next 3 to 5 years. Anybody who's native to it, anybody who's using it every day, oh, I need to do this, I'm going to get an assist here, I'm going to sort of batch that up and get the AI to do it here. Anyone who's not learning those skills, I think you're falling behind. And AI agents, so what are we talking about when I say AI agent? Isn't ChatGPT already an AI agent? I talk to ChatGPT every day. No, so agents are when you ask ChatGPT to do something and it goes away and does it, even if 16 or 18 different things need to happen. Normally you think of a chat bot or a chat interface, chat mode of talking to an AI like ChatGPT. You just say, hey, give me a list of the Roman emperors from 0 AD to 200 AD. And then it gives it to you. And then you say, oh, which ones were the most hated? And then it gives you the answer. Oh, that's interesting. Can you provide a CSV file of the best or the worst Roman empires? And it does that. And so you chat back and forth. With an AI agent, you're going to be asking it to do something like book 12 sales meetings with people who are on our marketing list of people who downloaded our March ebook and expressed interest in a demo. And then with the list, with the file, with whatever it needs, with the ability to write emails, with the ability to chat back and forth in email, with the ability to SMS text, who knows, with the ability to generate its own images, if necessary, maybe your brand's images or custom graphs or that kind of thing. The AI agent will go and just find 10 customers from your list. They might see what their names are, look them up on the internet, personalize the email, send out the email, get a question, respond with an image, finally book the meeting, put it on the Google Calendar or the Microsoft Calendar. And then all of a sudden, a week later, you said, hey, robot, go check this marketing list and book sales meetings. And just like something a human would do, not necessarily like giving you back a text or an image or a nice looking video, but actually going and doing something out there where they communicate with real people and make images and write emails and act like a worker. It's managing that kind of AI tool. And you can install one of those today. The beginnings of that. You can install your own local, you don't even need to call ChatGPT. You can install your own AI on your own Mac computer if it's got a Mac, you know, Apple Silicon chip. You can run these AIs where you don't even have to use the internet. You can have the AI on your computer, one, and you can start to, I mean, really just scratch the surface, but these things move so fast, but scratch the surface of AI agents who are going to go out and take an instruction and then come back to you a day later saying, I did 1,000 things and look at me, I'm a great employee, I'm faster than all your other employees. That's going to happen. So that's prediction two. Prediction three is that the digital nomad niche will start to break up. I think digital nomad is now an overused term. It can refer to anything. It can refer to a single person who's having a gap year from uni from the UK, just heading out and freelancing and not making that much money and hanging out in Thailand and thinking about an online business and all that kind of thing. It can be that. It can also be a family with four kids who is spending the summer in Bulgaria and the winter in Thailand and the spring and the fall in Vienna and Budapest and looking for, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, looking for continuous education for their kids while they're traveling to all these places, global healthcare. Not that this, you know, the young person doesn't care about healthcare, but they care less. They have full family healthcare, education, and all the kinds of things that families think about. And those kinds of digital nomad families, as well as singles, as well as couples, as well as people who are looking to kind of have a summer real estate, or sorry, winter real estate somewhere warm for 6 months and only go move like snowbirds. I think we're going to start to have words like that. Snowbirds, digital nomads with families, remote workers. We won't just call everyone digital nomads anymore, especially when most people are not nomadic forever. There are permanent digital nomads, but the vast majority of nomads aren't nomads. They're temporary travelers who will eventually settle down into one or two or three bases. But yeah, I think we'll see this definition break up. So prediction four, spatial computing. I think it will have its pioneers. I don't think we're going to see Vision Pros on everyone out there remote working right away, but kind of like the first computers and maybe the first year that there were smartphones, every 20th or every 100th person might have some kind of virtual reality on at the workplace. I don't think people will like walk down a food market in the middle of the street and wear mixed reality or spatial computing glasses, even when it gets popular 3 or 5 years from now. Like, I don't think that people are going to wear it outside that much. There might be some nice glasses that come out eventually. But really where what I mean when I say of you'll start to see 1 in 10 people using this is at a co-working space, at a place where people are trying to be productive, you'll start to see over the next year or two that one person who's not flipping open a laptop, but sitting down, maybe with a keyboard in front of them and seemingly getting their day's work done inside a Vision Pro or inside a Meta Quest 3. I mean, I don't think you would use a Quest yet, but maybe the Quest 4 and 5 will be optimized for work. And, you know, there'll be more Vision Pros from Apple at some point. They've invested a lot into this. And I do think you'll start to see people say, hey, it frees up so much monitor space. I can have the equivalent of 8 HD monitors all around me floating in the sky that I can see in crisp high definition. And I didn't actually have to set up 8 monitors. So it's an upgrade from my laptop to this spatial holographic world. You'll start to see that. And so Vision Pro and spatial computing won't be as big of an immediate hit as mobile. I mean, almost nothing will ever kind of match the computerification of 7 billion people getting a supercomputer into everybody's pocket. It's hard to imagine that getting spatial computing goggles into everybody's household is going to result in as many sold as the phones, maybe eventually when they're glasses, but I think that's still 10 or 20 years away. And the jacking into our brains and just talking with telepathy might leapfrog all of this at some point. Fifth prediction is that almost every country will have some kind of digital nomad visa, but they will still be lightly used or underused as an actual method for traveling around. So a couple of years ago now, going on, I guess it's going on 3.5 or 4 years now, because it really started in 2020, countries have been issuing digital nomad and remote work visas. So if you think of what the process was to get a visa to come to the United States or UK or Croatia or Thailand or any of these places 5 years ago, let's say, generally, I mean, other than Europeans being able to travel around in the EU, which is very nice for them, you would generally have to go through some kind of process, even close by countries like a Canadian looking to work in the United States. You still have 1 to 9 month to multi-year process to worry about getting to the other country. And you would have to prove that you either have a job or you're an extraordinary individual or you have a certain education. And you would have to get a lawyer usually and file and wait. And so these digital nomad visas, and again, if you've been reading the site, you probably heard of them before, but just in case you haven't heard about them, the nomad visas are saying, hey, as long as you make your money elsewhere and you're not interfering with our local economy negatively, which is one reason why countries don't want immigration, is because the newcomers might take potential and existing jobs away from the longer time locals, even though most countries are in the beginning all made up of immigration all the way through. That's sort of beside the point. Digital nomad visas allow people to say, hey, I got health insurance, I make $7,000 a month, and I can prove it. And I'm not making it by working locally at a bakery here in your country, Croatia. I'm making it somewhere else because I work online. And so it's really just bringing money into the country to my bank account. And then I'll go out and buy goods and eat food and buy from grocery stores and spend time at restaurants in your country, contributing to the economy where I otherwise might have gone somewhere else. And so started with a few countries, and then it was drip, drip, drip. And then it was a flood, because I think at least 60 or 70 countries now have digital nomad visas. Some of them are more flexible than others, and digital nomads themselves will often argue, oh, this country said they released a digital nomad visa, but it's really just a two-year remote work visa that's still kind of complicated, and it doesn't allow me as a digital nomad to kind of get in and get out in 8 weeks or however long I want to stay. Many of them are still written as if you're kind of emigrating for 12 to 24 months. And so digital nomads would argue that that's not the point of digital nomadism, to commit to somewhere for 18 months or a year. It's to go in easily, you know, fulfill all your obligations as a visitor or resident and get out without too much overhead, and to be able to do that more often. But we'll see. I mean, I think over time, the remote work expat voice and the size of that subcategory of people will be so much larger than the actual digital nomads that it may be that many visas are remote work visas and not digital nomad visas, but we'll see. The point is, the countries are all competing, and it has larger implications for countries competing for top talent as AI destroys a bunch of jobs and the traditional labor migration patterns start to change. It's going to be an interesting dynamic where we often felt that countries were trying to put up barriers or make it hard for you to come, unless you're a nurse or an engineer, or you make a lot of money, or you're going to invest, or you're going to buy real estate. It wasn't easy to just come as long as you have income elsewhere. Now, more rich people could always move around, but more middle-class people will be able to say, well, I make this much money. There's 30 countries that will let me legally live there, maybe not pay tax, maybe pay tax for a period of time, and I can renew it, and there's a path to staying longer. Maybe I don't want to be in Canada. Maybe I do want to be in Thailand or Mexico or Costa Rica or Spain or Portugal or Croatia or Japan or South Korea. Yes, even some of the Asian nations, which are not traditionally known to be doing this quite as much as the Latin American and the European countries. You didn't think there was going to be a Japanese digital nomad visa or a South Korean digital nomad visa, but they're not here, they're coming. Okay, so we said, you know, to recap, we're kind of at the halfway point. Companies will bring people back to the office, and you should worry about that if you're a remote work aficionado or you want to stay remote. But the bigger problem you should worry about will be layoffs. That's number one. Number two, AI agents will be the next frontier for innovation in employment and self-employment. Four, digital nomads will break out into niches, digital nomads with kids. There will be more subcategories. Spatial computing, next one, we'll have more pioneers. People will start to work in spatial computing. If it wasn't clear what my prediction was on the nomad visas, it's that almost every country will have a digital nomad visa. Many, many countries, over 100, will say if you make a certain amount of money and it's done remotely, you are welcome here for at least a year or two. And that will change the dynamics of migration of people around the world. Next prediction, I will say that remote work as kind of a industry or opportunity or market will be irrelevant or not that relevant as a VC-backed category. So investors won't be pouring a lot of money into remote work concepts or digital nomad businesses that cater to either the hospitality or the insurance or the sort of physical goods necessary or whatever, travel and tourism opportunities. There will not be big companies that are kind of capitalizing on the shift to remote work and digital nomads like there might have been in 2021 and 2022. So what will happen is that really good bootstrap companies that don't have a particular reason to take venture capital, but sell to this niche, which is smaller, I think, that many people predicted, oh, you know, there's going to be a billion digital nomads. We're all going to be remote working. And clearly it's not moving that fast, but there will still be a niche to sell to in the tens of millions of people who consider themselves remote. And staying small and selling to that niche and even finding a niche within the niche within that niche for, you know, early childhood education or gap years for people that are 19 or activities for couples who are not looking for community from a bunch of people in a hostel, but are looking for a different kind of community catering to that. So there'll be niches within niches. And most of the businesses that serve these things, like I mentioned, probably won't or shouldn't take venture capital because the opportunity is not that big. I'm just going to take two more predictions. I don't know how many that is now, but let's just say, yeah, let's say two more. So the next one is we'll see the absolute evisceration, the absolute destruction of commercial real estate in downtowns, especially in North America and places where the main purpose of the downtown wasn't necessarily cultural or residential. If the main purpose of a downtown was a hub where people engaged in knowledge work in large skyscrapers. So that's many of the cities across America, you know, Columbus, Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, to a certain extent, St. Louis, et cetera, et cetera. Atlanta, all across the country, large offices with buildings where people were meant to work sitting at a desk downtown. There'll be people complaining that it's liberal policies that cause crime. There'll be people complaining that it's conservative capitalists and their greed about their buildings that's causing it. But basically, downtowns will go through this seismic shift where the value of commercial real estate will kind of bring a lot of the companies owning and financing these buildings. They'll send them underwater. It won't look like anything from the outside. It's not like you're walking down the street and seeing a building and saying, oh, that building is behind on its debt or and the owner's going to go bankrupt. No, you're not gonna think that. What you're gonna think is, wow, it feels empty here. Or does anybody use these buildings? And oh, I thought there was a coffee shop here and a salad bar. I guess they went out of business because no one's coming to work. And so we'll see, like there have been in, you know, different decades and times since the first offices like we know them now started to be built. It's going to be rough and we're going to have to repurpose downtowns. And I'll say one little story where I don't know how economically this works and how, you know, culturally you might need to change in some cities that are not set up like this. But I remember one time I was at Toulouse in the south or southwest of France, kind of near the Pyrenees and the border to Spain and Andorra. And I was walking around and it was kind of different than North America. I mean, you expect it to be older and sort of some of the buildings date from the 19th century or even the 18th century. And maybe a few here and there churches that are older than that. But the thing that struck me was not sort of the picturesque fairy tale quality of the older buildings in Toulouse. It was more just the idea that there were young kids, teenagers, old people, people that were working, people that were relaxing, and all kinds of people hanging out in what would be considered the downtown. So this downtown is obviously, you know, set up a bit more, not haphazardly, but a little bit more like a medieval village. Roads wind around. There's sort of a spin wheel. There's a main bridge and a river that bisects the town, and it kind of works along that, along the riverbanks. But it's kind of organic, and it's not like, certainly not like the grid of downtown Vancouver or downtown Manhattan, that kind of thing. All this different aspects of society were mingling with each other. And if cities in North America can take this example, I would say there's an opportunity to maybe turn some of the downtowns around, prioritize parks, public areas, really think about what to do with these large buildings. It seems a little bit far-fetched, and I'm skeptical just because of heating, air conditioning, zoning. There is this idea that large commercial buildings could be converted into residential. I think that sounds amazing and sort of sustainable. It has this air of doing the right thing. Like, yeah, that's what we should do. We shouldn't bulldoze the buildings and we shouldn't cause destruction. We should be sustainable and we should be innovative and thoughtful, and we should convert offices into apartments. But if you've ever like slept in a building that's an office instead of a residence, have you ever done that? You ever slept over at work? You ever been somewhere in that kind of situation? There's a certain way the wind blows. There's a certain way the air kind of heats up and doesn't heat up, the way the carpet feels. I do think it would take a lot of work. Maybe the thinking is that like the standards don't have to be that high, even if it's a little bit uncomfortable, as if you were building a residential building from scratch. That's still housing for people who might not complain and would want it and would want affordable housing and or at least more options on the market so that the trickle-down effect can be more units on the market and more affordable housing all the way down. I'm a little skeptical that it's not just going to be we can't talk around it. It's going to be a rough 5 to 10 years for downtowns, and some may not recover. They might just become areas that are too hard to handle. A bunch of skyscrapers that aren't really set up, no sidewalks. I don't know what we're going to do, but I don't think we're going to see people working in those offices the same way we have for years and years before the pandemic. Again, I don't think there's going to be a resurgence. There's no chance that the offices fill up with cubicle workers, especially with AI and outsourcing and everything. They're just not going to fill up again. And so, I don't know, final prediction, actually, this is probably the most boring prediction. So I'm just going to say it quickly. It's just that there will be more insurance products that cater to remote workers and nomads. We've had members of Safety Wing and Insured Nomads on the podcast before. Health insurance for travelers, remote workers, and digital nomads is a big category. But it is something that is in the background. It's there if you need it. And I just think whether it's Insured Nomads and Safety Wing expanding their product line, or new entrants coming on, or the big companies, you know, trying to innovate, although I don't think the big insurance companies can innovate that fast, but you know, they will come around and start offering products. There will be more options to just say, hey, I'm traveling 5 places this year. I want an insurance product that covers it all and makes me feel safe and makes me feel safe about my partner or my dependents, my kids. And yeah, there's already plans like Insured Nomads plan and Safety Wings plan that cover this kind of thing. And there's just going to be more competition and more growth in this industry and in people using these kinds of products. So thanks again. We're going to fire up a podcast. We're going to get on video podcasts, and we're going to restart the newsletter all soon as we do a full relaunch. And so yeah, I'll see you soon on Feed.